Brilliance Audio presents the unabridged recording of Third Strike by Heather Brewer, performed by Alexander Sendes. Prologue. M carefully lifted the teapot from its place on the doily and poured the steaming blood into two ornate china cups. The color of the burgundy blood against the white of the china was bold and interesting, M noted. Not like the color of blood soaked into a rug or spattered against the curtains. Perhaps it was the purity of both things, blood and china, she thought, that appealed to her in such a comforting way. One cup had been placed in front of M, and the other in front of her guest, who sat in the shadowed quiet of M's parlor. M offered her guest some sugar, but she politely declined. M plopped three cubes into her cup, marveling at the crystallized sugar cubes as they melted away into the blood, and sat back with a sigh, content to blow the steam from her cup of AB negative, something an old friend had once described to her as the champagne of blood types.
How exactly will you arrange for him to be alone?
The girl's words were softly spoken, and M couldn't help but wonder whether or not she was up to the task. After all, it wasn't as if this boy, this slayer called Joss McMillan, were someone easily disregarded. He was skilled, a dangerous quality for any human with a bloodthirst for vampires. He had to be dealt with, and quickly. M just hoped that she wasn't choosing poorly by sending this girl to do him in. Though her advantage was obvious, she was still young. Very young, in comparison to her youthful-looking host. M sipped from her cup, and as she returned it to its saucer on the table, she dabbed at her lips with a napkin before placing the napkin in her lap. Not many were subjected to this old-world side of M, the ladylike grace and appreciation of finer things. Not many often saw beyond her youthful appearance of wild-colored hair and gothic-style clothing. Few had ever been invited into her parlor, but here she was with this girl, debating whether or not the girl had what it takes to face an enemy of skill. She was very new to vampire life, as it were, young, naive, and certainly not well-trained. Em wondered if she should have just killed Joss herself, but the thought passed quickly through her mind before it disappeared once again. No, this was the right killer for Joss. The girl had a reluctant hunger inside of her to take the boy's life, and the boy clearly had a reluctance in him to face her. Hunting him down herself was a recipe for disaster, in M's eyes. M didn't hunt down the majority of those who have wronged her. She had people for that. People like this promising new protege.
Everything's been arranged. Have you been in recent contact with your drudge?
The girl picked up her cup at last and took a healthy drink, wincing as she burned her tongue. She nodded as she bit into a thin wafer cookie in an effort to soothe her mouth. Through a mouthful of cookie, she said,
I have. My drudge stands at the ready to assist me.
M wrinkled her nose at the girl's lack of manners. Truth be told, she'd killed kings and queens for less. But she liked this girl, this newborn vampire, for reasons that she could not yet identify. And so she let the girl live. For now, anyway.
I trust you know what will happen to you both if you fail to take the young slayer's life.
Her hands strangely steady, her voice oddly confident, the girl looked at M and said with a tone that conveyed that she was well aware of what was at stake here.
If I don't kill Joss, you'll kill us both.
Wrong.
M's lips curled into a cruel, sadistic smile.
If you fail in your task, I won't just kill you both. I'll obliterate your remains and lick your blood from my walls.
There was a pause, a distinct one, before the girl responded. But when she did, her voice sounded just as confident, just as driven as M had been hoping it would. She returned her cup to its saucer and reached for another cookie. As the sweet treat reached her lips, she smiled in a way that mirrored M.
Don't worry. I'm looking forward to taking Joss's life away. He deserves it for what he did to me.
Em released a breath in a soft sigh, settling back in her chair, satisfied. Her eyes moved casually over the walls of her suite.
That's good to hear, young one, because I rather do like this wallpaper. It would be a shame to have to replace it.
1. The Return of the Invisible Boy. Joss took a deep breath and reached for his bedroom doorknob once again. He couldn't hide upstairs all day, and if his dad found out that he was standing in his room when there was entertaining to do, he'd ground Joss on the spot. But Joss had needed just a few minutes to escape the noise and the laughter and the warm bodies that hosting a family reunion at their home had created. He'd needed just a moment to himself, without questions about his school and friends he didn't have, and the occasional sympathetic gleam in someone's eyes whenever anyone brought up the word sister or the name Cecile. What Joss really needed was some time to put on his happy face, his normal teenager mask, when he was anything but. And it's not like he was the only one in his immediate family who was pretending.
Joss! Get your butt outside now!
His dad was calling from outside, but he might as well have been standing right next to Joss. His voice was so loud, so full of attention that had grown by leaps and bounds in the past few years. What would Joss give to ease that tension? Just about anything. Ever since relatives had begun pouring into their home this morning, his dad had been wearing a plastic smile and referring to Joss as son, always with a hearty slap on the back like they were buddies or something. But his plastic smile, his plastic cheery voice had slipped just then, and Joss wondered if anyone else had noticed. Joss's mom wore a smile as well, but only when someone else, someone who hadn't been subjected to the downfall of their immediate family, was looking. But Joss could still see the shadows lurking in her eyes. He could feel the pain wafting off of her in a way that all of their extended family couldn't or wouldn't, in the spirit of keeping this gathering relatively pleasant. It was as if the three of them were merely players putting on an act for the rest of the world to see. A strange play called Normal Family, and Joss had the starring role. It was false, this image, but for whatever reason, they all felt the need to take part in it, to fool the world, even though Joss was relatively certain that they weren't fooling anyone. But everyone pretended, even their audience. It was like clapping after the failed performance of a sad troupe of clowns. People felt bad for them. People pitied them. But no one truly believed them. Readying himself, Joss donned his fake, polite smile and opened the door to the hall, leaving backstage behind. It was time for Act Two. The moment the door was opened, the sounds of family and joyous laughter filled his ears. Joss moved along the short hallway and down the narrow stairs into the kitchen, where he exchanged smiles with Aunt Matilda before she whisked a big bowl of some kind of creamy dip off the counter and into the living room. Joss's mom followed her with an armload of bags of chips, but as she did, she called over her shoulder, "Joss, please help Henry with those vegetables." Sitting at the counter on a bar stool, his shoulders hunched, looking miserable and angry and on the verge of an explosive outburst, was Henry. A voice from their shared past whispered through Joss's memory when he saw his cousin. "We'll always be brothers." Even though there were only a few feet of space between the two cousins, it might as well have been a mile-wide chasm, and Joss wasn't certain that the chasm could ever be healed. It was a wound in their shared world, one he'd caused, one that Henry was keeping open. Maybe things would never get back to what they had been before the incident with Vlad, with the stake, with the society. On the counter in front of Henry sat a cutting board, a paring knife, a tray half full of sliced vegetables, and a bowl of whole carrots, celery, broccoli, and cauliflower. Joss approached slowly, the way one might approach an animal in the woods. "Need some help?" Without warning, Henry stabbed the tip of the knife into the cutting board so that the knife stood on end. It wavered a tiny bit before stopping, its blade catching the light in a way that made it shine. He met Joss's eyes, his jaw tight, his every muscle looking wound up like a spring that was about to break. Why don't you do it? You're the one who's so good at stabbing things, you know, like people. At first, Joss didn't know what to say or do. He hadn't seen Henry since he'd staked the vampire Vladimir Todd in Bathory, and Henry clearly hadn't forgiven him for having done so, or come to understand Joss's reasons. Vlad had been Joss's friend, or so Joss had thought. But Vlad was also a vampire, and killing vampires was Joss's job. But more than that, it was his mission in life to defend mankind, of which his cousin Henry was a part. But Henry refused to understand that. Are you ever going to let that go? Henry stood and moved past him, knocking his shoulder into Joss's. As he did, he said, No? So that should be the last time you bother to ask. Joss didn't respond or even look after Henry as he left the room. He merely stood there, stunned at how much his life had changed in just a few short years, and not knowing whether it would ever again resemble anything at all what it used to be, or if the fiction that it had become would go on forever. After a few quiet minutes finishing the vegetable tray, Joss cleaned up and carried the tray into the living room, where the majority of his relatives were gathered. Some of the men were outside, emptying brown bottles with enthusiastic grins and commenting on the meat as Joss's dad flipped it over on the grill. But one man in particular was still indoors, and it made Joss's smile switch from false to genuine the moment he saw him. Uncle Mike, or Big Mike as everyone called him, looped his arm around Joss's head, tugging him closer, almost knocking the tray from his hand. Then he rubbed his knuckles into Joss's hair before letting him go.
Hey, Jossy boy, what are you up to?
Joss couldn't help but grin.
His Uncle Mike just had a welcoming, happy air about him, like a lighthouse to a lost crew. After setting the tray on the coffee table next to the dip, Joss turned back to his uncle and beamed.
Not much. I saw Henry in the kitchen. He seemed upset.
He wasn't sure why he'd brought it up exactly. There was nothing that anyone, not even Big Mike, could do to mend what was broken between Joss and his cousin. Because the truth was that Joss had staked Vlad, intending to kill him, and Henry would never forgive him for that. But what Henry didn't know was that a small whisper of doubt had entered Joss's mind just before the stake had made contact with Vlad's skin, and Joss had moved the weapon slightly to the left on purpose, knowing that Vlad would likely survive. Because Joss wasn't sure how he felt about Vlad exactly, how he felt about Dorian, how he felt about vampires in general. He was confused, but Henry wouldn't understand that either. Big Mike ruffled Joss's hair with his enormous hand.
Don't you let Henry's foul mood get you down, Jossy boy. That boy's been moody for months now. I think it's girl troubles myself, but your Aunt Matilda thinks he and his buddy Vlad, you remember Vlad, are having issues. He'll get through it. Just don't you mind him until he does.
He wished he could believe his uncle, but he couldn't. Because Joss knew very well that Henry's issue wasn't with some random girl or his best friend. It was with Joss, and Henry had already made up his mind about him.
Joss, would you please take these steaks out to your dad?
Without awaiting an answer, his mom handed him a plate of thick red raw meat. With a shrug at Uncle Mike, because Joss didn't really have any idea how to respond to him about Henry, Joss made his way through the crowd and out the side door. He was glad to see so many family members outside because it would make speaking to his dad a lot easier. Speaking through their masks was so much more pleasant than interacting the way that they did whenever no one else was around.
Hey, Dad, Mom sent these out for you.
His dad smiled his fake smile and took the plate, offering Joss a semi-grateful nod. Then a hand fell on Joss's shoulder. When Joss turned his head, resisting his slayer instincts to flip the unseen person over his shoulder and pin them on the ground, he realized that it was his cousin Greg, Henry's older brother. Greg was looking tan and fit, as usual, dressed in tan cargo shorts and a black tank top.
Hey, Joss! How you doing, man? Listen, do you mind if we talk?
Before Joss could utter a word, Greg was steering him away from the grill and away from all the people.
Joss didn't feel alarmed at all, just relieved to not be on stage for the moment, as he and Greg crossed the lawn to the forest's edge that bordered the property. Just at that edge, Greg stopped and gave him a look that said that he was worried. "What's going on with you and Henry, kid?"
Joss swallowed hard and shrugged, trying desperately to put his mask back on so that his cousin wouldn't see how upset the whole situation really made him. But Greg saw the scramble and tossed that metaphorical mask on the ground with a sigh.
"Joss, it's clear you two are fighting. But about what? I can't help you if you don't tell me what's going on. You guys used to be so close, and then suddenly every time someone at my house says your name, Henry's eyeballs catch on fire. What's up?"
At least Joss knew that he wasn't misinterpreting Henry's fury toward him. He shrugged one shoulder in response, but when Greg crossed his arms in front of his chest, Joss knew that he wasn't about to accept aloofness for an answer. He raked his hair back from his forehead with an exasperated sigh.
"I don't know, Greg. I guess Henry just doesn't like me anymore."
He wasn't exactly certain what Greg's response to that might be, but he did know that he hadn't been expecting what Greg said next.
"Well, that's crap." Not so much as a smile on his lips, not even the hint of one.
Joss blinked.
"What?"
Greg shook his head.
"Of course he likes you. He's your cousin. He's your friend. But it seems like he's worried about you. Any idea why that might be?"
There were a million reasons that Henry should be worried about Joss. The danger of vampires, the risky missions, the price that Dorian had warned him had been placed on his head by M. But Joss was fairly certain that Henry wasn't worried at all. He was pretty convinced that Henry was angry, because Joss had staked Vlad, and Henry's mind had been clouded when he was turned into Vlad's human slave. Joss met his cousin's gaze. "Greg, I don't think he's worried about me, but I'm worried about him. This Vlad kid..."
"Hold up.
Vlad? You mean the kid who was your best pal for much of the last school year? The kid who's been like a second little brother to me since day one? That Vlad?"
Joss paused. He didn't want to get Greg worked up or ticked off at him, too.
So instead, he chose more gentle words. "You don't have to get defensive. Vlad's not who you think he is, that's all. I'm not saying he's a bad guy or anything. I'm just saying..." What was he saying? Even he wasn't sure. What he really wanted to do was to grab Greg by the shirt collar and scream into his face, "He's a vampire, okay? Vladimir Todd is a dangerous creature that will bite you and suck the lifeblood from your veins."
But he didn't. He remained calm, even though it was killing him to do so. Greg uncrossed his arms at last and sighed.
"Then what are you saying, Joss? Because if you know something that I don't, if Vlad is getting mixed up in some bad stuff, I need to know. I can't let my brother follow him down a bad path."
Or a dark one, thought Joss. Or an alley. Or anywhere that they might be alone without witnesses to the horrors that Vlad was capable of. But he didn't put voice to any of those thoughts. Instead, he said, "I'm just trying to help Henry see that maybe Vlad isn't as good as he thinks he is. That's all."
"That's all?"
Greg's posture relaxed, but he went back to shaking his head.
"No wonder his eyes catch on fire like that. You've got to be careful, Joss. Vlad's been as close to Henry as a friend can get since they were kids. You've really got to get a grip on your jealousy. Vlad is Henry's friend, but you're family."
Jealous? Is that what Greg thought? Joss wasn't jealous of Vlad. He was merely trying to protect his cousin. But how could he make Greg understand any of that without exposing the existence of vampires in the Slayer Society?
"That's not what I..."
"Joss, a word if you please."
Joss turned his head at the familiar voice. A strange tension entered his body the moment his eyes met with that of the speaker's.
"Uncle Abraham, when did you get here?"
"A word."
Abraham's eyes narrowed. In stark contrast to what Greg was wearing, Abraham donned his usual slacks, shirt, and vest. Over it, he wore a tweed jacket with patches on the elbows. He was looking very much like his cover story,
a successful university professor.
If you don't mind, Greg.
No problem, Uncle Abraham.
Greg looked back to Joss before walking away to rejoin the men by the grill.
Just remember what I said, kid. Jealousy isn't healthy.
Joss couldn't say anything to that. He wasn't jealous. He was just trying to do a very important, very secret job.
Who are you jealous of, nephew? Greg? Henry? Either would be an apt choice. Both are physically adept, confident young men.
He cast Joss a sidelong glance.
Either would make a fine slayer.
Joss wouldn't allow himself to feel any of the barbs that his uncle might throw at him. He knew very well that his uncle hadn't exactly been accepting of the notion that Joss was the next slayer in his family line.
I assume you're not just here for the barbecue?
The corner of Abraham's mouth lifted in a small, knowing smile.
I have your next assignment.
Relief flooded over Joss. His next assignment. That meant he'd be leaving Santa Carla for the summer. It meant he'd be spending time with his Slayer family, the few people on this planet who could actually understand the enormous pressures and responsibility that Joss was facing on a regular basis. It meant that he was going home, for the summer at least. From inside his sports coat, Abraham pulled a small parchment envelope bearing the red wax seal of the Slayer Society. As he handed it to Joss, he said,
This mission will require stealth in a way that you've not yet achieved, nephew. You'll have to decide exactly how to remain hidden in this scenario, and it won't be easy for you, I'm afraid.
Is it ever? The words passed over his lips in a whisper before he'd had a chance to truly examine how they might sound to his uncle, his mentor. Fortunately, Abraham either hadn't heard them or ignored them completely.
You're on your own this time, Slayer. Your team has assignments in other cities, myself included. This task falls to you and you alone, by the bequeath of the society. Only Paddy will remain behind with you, but strictly to act as a liaison between you and the society elders. She cannot help you in your task.
Joss furrowed his brow and turned the envelope over in his hands curiously. He rubbed his thumb along the wax seal and pondered.
What's my assignment, exactly?
Intel has shown that there are vampires running wild in a certain small town, picking off human townsfolk whenever the mood takes them. You need to track down the creatures and stop as many of them as you possibly can before a cleansing of the town becomes necessary.
A cleansing. The Slayer Society would sweep through the town, killing everyone, both vampire and human alike, wiping the slate clean. It had been done before, but not for 100 years. Joss hoped that it would never be done again.
Where am I going?
Nowhere.
Joss snapped his eyes to Abraham's. Abraham cracked a smile, but Joss was damn certain that it wasn't a reflection of inner peace or joy. It was sadistic, that line in his mouth. It was cruel, the way that Abraham had been cruel, the way that Abraham was still cruel. Then, as if to erase all doubts as to what he was saying, Abraham said,
The town of which I speak is the one in which you currently reside.
Joss's chest suddenly felt empty, hollowed out by the realization of what it would mean if he failed. His family was here. His parents. He swallowed hard, the name of the town escaping his lips in a disbelieving breath. Santa Carla? Abraham tipped the brim of the brown fedora he was wearing in Joss's direction and smiled before turning to walk away. Over his shoulder, he confirmed Joss's query with a matter-of-fact tone and an almost sing-song voice that grated on Joss's every last nerve.
Santa Carla, you'd think that with your training and keen eye, you might have noticed.
But Joss hadn't noticed. He hadn't noticed anything that suggested that vampires had infested the town in which he lived. Was he losing his touch? Or had he never really had one in the first place? As his uncle walked away, Joss watched him, clutching the envelope in his hands, so tight between his fingers that he was amazed that the pages didn't crumble. Uncle Abraham joined the men who were still standing around the grill, even though Joss's dad had closed the lid and just begun to carry the plate of cooked food back into the house. Abraham smiled at them, and they smiled back, sweeping him easily into their casual conversation. Joss realized then that while he and his parents were sad clowns, a pitiful act on a stage of sorrow, his uncle was a master of disguise. No one saw him for the slayer that he was, or for the gifted liar that he had to be. Joss was torn between wanting to be like his uncle and hoping that he never became like him in any way. Shock held Joss to that very spot. Shock that his family was at risk. If he failed in his mission, they would die. It was as simple as that. Not to mention what it meant for Joss to face down multiple vampires on the loose, ones who'd decided that they were free to feed on the innocent people of Santa Carla at will, without repercussion. He didn't know if he was capable of taking the vampires out all by himself, without the aid of his skilled team members. He only knew that he was scared and worried for his family. He couldn't have felt more relieved that his extended family would be leaving town the next morning. At least Greg, Aunt Matilda, Big Uncle Mike, and the others would be safe. At least Henry would be safe. But his parents? No. Joss would do anything to protect them from the ravenous hunger of mad vampires on the run and the cleansing intent of the Slayer Society. Anything. But he had to do so in a way that his parents wouldn't notice him. Because if they did, Joss's whole world would come crashing down around him. He'd have too much explaining to do, and he had no idea how to even begin such a task. How could he hide his vampire hunting and killing efforts from his parents when doing such a thing resulted in so much blood, so many scars? Joss suddenly wished that he was invisible. A slight breeze rustled through the trees, brushing his hair from his eyes, and then, strangely, ironically, he remembered that once their family reunion was over and everyone else had gone home, his parents would go back to their sad selves, and he would once again be the invisible boy. But this time, it would be on purpose. 2. The sudden onset of being Amish. No one on the planet could have been more relieved than Joss the next morning when the last few relatives had packed up their cars and said their goodbyes. Except maybe for Henry, who had picked up his suitcase and practically sprinted toward the rental car's trunk. Joss hurried to follow, wondering all the while whether his and Henry's friendship would ever, could ever be mended. Not likely. Not the way that Henry was acting. Standing at the rear of the car were Joss's dad and Big Mike. Just as Henry began to lift his bag and set it inside the open trunk, Big Mike laid a big hand on his shoulder.
"Hold on there a second, Henry."
With a confused look in his eyes, Henry set the bag on the ground beside the car.
"What's going on?"
Big Mike and Joss's dad exchanged a look. Relief flooded through Joss's veins. At least he wasn't the one in trouble this time. And besides that, maybe there was a hint of justice in the fact that Henry had been a total jerk to him all weekend and now he was getting yelled at for something. Joss straightened his shoulders and watched Big Mike, waiting for whatever storm that was coming. As he stood there, he swore he smelled a hint of rain, but there were no clouds overhead. Just another sunny, bright day in Santa Carla.
"It seems to me that you've been a tad disrespectful to your cousin here all weekend. And I don't like it. And I know your mother doesn't like it at all. You boys have always been close, so whatever this is that's brewing between you, you should have the decency to put it aside when the family gets together for something like this reunion."
With every word that left Big Mike's lips, Henry's muscles tightened visibly. Big Mike kept his voice even. But his voice was big, too, like him, so it wasn't exactly something that Henry could ignore. Joss watched, grateful that he wasn't on the receiving end of things.
"Now, I want you to apologize to Joss for the way you behaved toward him all weekend.
Joss raised an expectant eyebrow at his cousin. He hated to admit it, but he was really enjoying this. Even if Henry's apology only sprang into existence because he was told to do so, it was a start. Besides, Henry had been rude to him all weekend, even if on some level Joss believed that he just might have deserved it. Steam practically escaped from Henry's ears the moment their eyes met. His cousin had always had a temper, and it had always made Joss laugh to see Henry lose it over something, but now that temper was being directed at Joss, and it wasn't so funny anymore. Henry darted a glare at Joss, as if he'd set this entire thing up. Then he glanced at Joss's dad before turning his attention back to Big Mike. "Dad, you don't understand." Big Mike chuckled. The sound of it reminded Joss of thunder in the distance.
"Oh, I understand better than you might think, son. Cousins fight. Brothers fight. And you two are going to stick together and work this out before it becomes unfixable."
Stick together? That made it sound like... But no. Henry was going home. Home, where he would be safe from a potential cleansing. Joss swallowed hard before asking, "What do you mean exactly?" Big Mike looked from Henry to Joss and back again.
"We've been talking, and it seems like what you boys both need is some extended time together so you can fix whatever's broken between you."
Joss's heart thumped hard inside his chest. So much for feeling justified in Henry receiving any kind of punishment for having been a jerk. Now Joss was being punished too, and he wasn't certain that he fully understood why. His dad spoke then, and Joss was shocked to hear his actual tone. Not the hurt, angry tone of a man who'd lost his daughter. Not the false tone of a man who was just fighting to keep it together in front of other people. But his actual voice. The real him. Hearing it sent goosebumps up Joss's spine. It was like listening to the whisperings of a long-forgotten ghost. And maybe, through doing that, whatever's broken in Joss can be mended too. Joss locked surprised eyes with his dad then. He had no idea that his dad even had an inkling that Joss had been facing anything difficult at all. If only he knew what. His dad nodded, furrowing his brow sympathetically.
"Clearly you're going through some heady stuff, son. Maybe this will help."
Clearly. Which meant that his dad had noticed. Which meant that maybe Joss wasn't so great after all at hiding the Slayer side of his life. But it also meant that his dad had seen him and was worried about him. Two things that he'd been convinced would never happen again. Henry's face and neck were turning red as if all of the blood in his body had gathered there. He refused to make eye contact with anyone.
"So, you're saying..."
Big Mike slapped Henry gently on the back with his meaty hand.
"We're saying you can drop this bag in the guest room next to Joss's bedroom and Joss will be happy to spend the next month with his favorite cousin."
Henry looked at his dad. Joss looked at his. And after a long silence, the boys looked at each other. Neither looked happy. Without another word, Henry picked up his bag and started carrying it toward the house. But he didn't get very far before Big Mike said,
"One more thing, son."
Henry stopped in his tracks and turned around. Joss could tell by his demeanor that it was taking every ounce of self-control for Henry not to scream at his dad.
"What? There's more?"
"Your cell phone, Henry. If you two are going to connect, you need no distractions. Hand it over."
Big Mike held out his palm, and instantly a kind of panic filled Henry's eyes. Joss knew it was panic because he was feeling it too. His dad said,
"You too, Joss."
His cell phone? But how was he supposed to call in for a cleanup or assistance? What if he got into serious trouble with the rogue vampires and he needed to call for help? If he didn't have his cell phone, he'd be in the dark out there, completely alone with his sworn enemies. His heart raced at the thought. With a curse under his breath that Big Mike seemed to purposely ignore, Henry slapped his cell phone into his dad's palm and stomped off to the house, leaving Joss standing there trying to think of an excuse his dad would buy for why he needed to keep his phone.
Joss? No. His dad meant business, and try as he might, Joss couldn't think of a believable lie to tell him. He pulled the phone from his pocket and handed it to his dad. The moment his fingers released it, Joss felt a foreboding fear sink into his every pore. He was on his own now, with no way to call for help. And how was he supposed to take care of the vampire problem when he had to babysit his cousin for the next month? And if he failed, what would happen to Henry? He knew very well what would happen to Henry. Henry, like Joss's parents, would die. Joss's mom and Aunt Matilda made their way from the house to the car then, chattering every step of the way. Behind them was Greg, who had his hands and arms full of luggage and Tupperware containers. As Greg placed everything in the trunk, the rest of the family exchanged hugs and handshakes. Joss moved through the entire scene in slow motion. He didn't feel present at all. It was more like a dream, a bad one. And all Joss wanted to do was to wake up, preferably somewhere his home life and family were very much kept separate from his job as a vampire slayer. As Henry's family's car moved down the driveway and then down the road, Joss watched it, wondering exactly how he was supposed to handle all of this, and whether or not he was up to the task. 3. Visiting Patty. As Joss climbed the stairs to his room, two things happened at the same time. One, Henry slammed the door to the guest room, sealing himself inside, and two, Joss's mom called after him.
Joss, don't forget to take the trash out.
He paused on the stairs, his eyes locked on Henry's closed door, and answered his mom as an afterthought.
In a second, be right down.
He didn't know if their dad's plan would work, or if it were even possible to mend this friendship, this relationship in the span of just 4 weeks. But he did know that he hoped that they could come out on the other side friends, or at the very least alive. It was unlikely, though. He was pretty sure Henry wanted him dead, or at least on the verge and twitching for what Joss had done to Vlad. Steal a guy's best friend and he can forgive you. Stake a guy's best friend through the back and he'll hate you to your core for all eternity. Joss moved the rest of the way up the stairs and slipped inside his bedroom, closing the door gently, quietly behind him. The moment it was closed, he pulled the Slayer Society letter from his back pocket and broke the seal. His uncle had given him most of the details already, but protocol dictated that he read the letter as well, in case extra details were located within. He scanned the letter, noting that Patty was staying in a cabin not too far from where his family's house was located. Smart move on the society's part. Wouldn't want Joss hoofing it all the way across town just to report his findings and activities to his team. The letter said that Patty was holding documents and further details for him, so Joss made a plan to escape his house for a bit and go see her. There had been no sign of Uncle Abraham since the family reunion broke up. He hadn't even said goodbye or wished Joss good luck at all. That fact bothered Joss more deeply than he would ever admit to. He wanted his uncle's approval, as a man, as a slayer, but he was beginning to wonder if he would ever truly be the recipient of it. Just when he'd thought they were making headway, Abraham stepped back again, taking his approval with him. Joss loved his uncle, but despised him at the same time. It was horrible, being torn in two like that, and he was ashamed to even admit those feelings to himself. He moved to the head of his bed and dropped quietly to the floor, removing a loose floorboard beneath where he lay at night. Even as he slipped the letter inside, Joss told himself that he shouldn't be doing this, shouldn't be keeping anything at all that might expose the existence of the Slayer Society. He'd been taught to burn all letters until they were nothing but ash and memories, so that no human would ever know that there was a secret organization in existence, protecting them from bloodthirsty monsters. But he couldn't help it. His job was utterly thankless. Sometimes he felt so unappreciated, as if he might as well not be doing anything at all to combat vampires, for all the praise it brought him. So late at night, whenever he was feeling sad or angry or bitter or alone, as the moonlight filtered in through the curtains, Joss would pull out the letters from the society and his journal and read the words that proved to him that he was doing the right thing. Because he was. Even if he sometimes questioned whether or not vampires were the evil creatures the society made them out to be. An image flashed in his mind. The face of a teenage boy. He had black hair that hung in his eyes and fangs. His name was Vlad. And Joss didn't know how that image made him feel. Guilty, mostly. And sad. And a little alone. He should have felt pride. He knew that. But mostly he just felt confused. Shaking the image away, Joss returned the loose floorboard to its place and stood, running a hand over the back of his neck in thought. He had to get out of the house for a while to visit Patty, but he wasn't certain how to do so without his parents suggesting that he take Henry along with him wherever he was going. Then in an instant, he had it. It was easier to ask forgiveness than permission, and his parents would just have to deal. As quietly as he could manage, Joss slipped out his door, along the hall, and down the stairs to the kitchen. He tied the garbage bag closed, lifted it from the can, and mumbled in his mom's direction. "Taking the garbage out!" He wasn't even sure that she'd heard him. It was as if the moment Aunt Matilda had left the premises, Joss's mom had retreated once again inside of her cocoon. The sorrowful glaze had returned to her eyes. The mourning of Cecile had resumed. Joss's heart cracked further as he opened the back door. His family was broken, and he wasn't at all certain how to mend them. He hadn't lied to his mom. He was taking the garbage out. It's just that he'd failed to mention that once he dropped the bag in the can beside the house, he was going to keep walking until he rendezvoused with a fellow slayer. Because Joss had a job to do. And though he wished that he had time to sit with his mom and coax her from her cocoon, he didn't. People were dying, and it was up to Joss to save them. Because if he didn't, they would all be dead soon, including his family. Dropping the bag in the can, Joss moved around and away from the house as quickly and quietly as he was able to, not wanting to be seen by his dad, who would inevitably have chores for him to do. Luckily, no one and nothing stopped his escape, and before Joss knew it, he was walking down the road, the sun gently baking his shoulders through his t-shirt, the sound of chirping birds filling his ears. It was a pleasant day, despite the gloom of his mother that still seemed so present in the back of Joss's mind. It didn't take him long to reach Patty's cabin, their temporary headquarters, and Joss could see why the society had chosen it as a base of operations. No one would ever suspect that a skilled vampire slayer, capable of taking life quickly and completely, would reside in a house like this. It was a small house painted a bright white with cheery, colorful flowers planted all around its base. The garden spread from the house to the wooden railway fence that surrounded its small, charming yard. The shutters were a deep blue, and beneath each of the small windows were flower boxes containing multicolored daisies. A brief thought swept through Joss's mind at the sight of them. Cecile would have loved those flowers. But as soon as the thought had appeared, it was gone again, swept away by the pleasant, unexpected breeze and Joss's unwillingness to think about his sister in the light of day. He'd decided over the last few days of his school year that Cecile would own his nights. But his days had to belong to him, or else he might lose his mind entirely. The nightmares had gotten worse, then stopped, then returned with a vengeance. Joss didn't sleep much anymore. When he did, he was chased by a monstrous version of his younger sister, one with deep, tunnel eyes and a mouth full of razor-sharp teeth. He wasn't certain anymore whether the Cecile from his dreams was a manifestation of his guilt for having failed to save her young life, or if she was an embodiment of evil, hell-bent on taking Joss's life. He just knew that sleep wasn't something he enjoyed, and the only thing he couldn't avoid forever. When he opened the small gate, it squeaked and then banged closed behind him as he approached the cottage.
He only just raised his fist to knock on the door when it whipped open and hands dragged him inside, slamming him against the wall. The lights dimmed briefly, but then his vision returned to find Patty's eyes widening in shock. Apologies flew from her mouth as she released him and closed the door.
Joss, oh no, I'm so sorry. You just never know who's coming, and I really had no idea it was you. I'm all on edge from being assigned to stay here alone, and...
She sighed and looked at him then, a frown pulling the corners of her pretty mouth down.
Are you okay? I really am sorry.
Apart from his heart being shifted into overdrive, Joss was fine. He smiled at her. You know, come this fall, that's no way to greet trick-or-treaters. Patty smirked.
But it's summer, so I'm good, right?
Joss looked around the room. It was a small, relatively open floor plan. Cozy. Nice. So does that mean you don't have any candy? She groaned then and gave him a playful punch in the arm before returning to the kitchen where she'd been stirring something steamy and delicious smelling on the stove.
You're starting to sound like Morgan.
Joss sat on a bar stool by the kitchen island that held the stove, taking in the yummy smells. Chili, maybe. Or some kind of spicy soup. Patty picked up the wooden spoon and stirred the concoction, causing Joss's stomach to rumble. How is Morgan, anyway? I was hoping...
You were hoping to see the team again, right?
She glanced up at him in that mothering way that she had about her.
It sucks that you can't, Joss. But the society... Things are weird. Something's going on.
He plucked a clean spoon from the counter and dipped it into the pot. As he blew the steam from his stolen bite, he said,
Mind being more specific?
Patty shook her head and ladled him a small bowl of her cooking. As Joss placed the spoon in his mouth, he recognized it as chili. Only Patty could make chili like this, with banana peppers and jalapenos. So delicious, so spicy, that Joss knew he'd crave it for days. As he began working on emptying his bowl, Patty wiped her hands off on a towel and sighed.
Who knows? Not me, that's for sure. All I know is that I was told that if I value my position as a slayer, I'll stay out of your assignment. I've been instructed to give you the initial intel, act as liaison between you and the society, and that's it. Or else...
Joss raised a sharp eyebrow at her. Or else what?
That's just it, Joss. I don't know.
Shaking her head, she returned the lid to the pot before meeting his eyes once again.
Anyway, if you need anything, just call. Not that it'll do much good, but I can call in for backup if needed, and we'll see what happens.
He picked up the bowl, slurping the last bits of chili from it, and set it back on the counter with a frown.
My dad took my cell phone.
Patty shrugged.
I can get you another.
No, thanks. If I get caught with a new phone, my parents would just ask questions that I don't have answers to. Besides, if all you can do is act as a liaison, then what's the point of the cell phone? If I need you, I'll knock.
The corner of his mouth rose in a smirk.
Try not to assault me next time, okay?
I'll try.
She looked at him then, for what seemed like a long time, as if she hadn't seen him in years, even though it had been only about 9 months since they'd left Manhattan.
You're getting taller. And cuter. Got a girlfriend yet?
Immediately, his thoughts were filled with the memory of a pretty girl in pink that he'd met back in Bathory. Meredith. He didn't yet have a girlfriend, but if he could, he wished more than anything that it could be her. His cheeks warmed in a blush, one that Joss hoped wasn't apparent. No.
Working on it?
Not really. I don't exactly have time for girls.
Or sleep.
She gestured to the circles beneath his eyes. Joss looked away, pushing the empty bowl from him rather abruptly.
I'd rather not talk about that.
The air changed then. It grew quiet and restless. Uncomfortable, when Joss had been enjoying the comfort of it so much just a moment before. At long last, Patty said,
Fair enough. There's a manila folder on the mantle. Inside is everything we know about the killings in Santa Carla.
Joss excused himself and wandered into the living room. As promised, lying on the mantle of the small fireplace was a thin manila folder. Inside were various files and notes regarding recent deaths in Santa Carla, but nothing stood out to Joss. Nothing screamed, "Vampire." He leafed through the papers as he walked back into the kitchen, taking his seat at the counter. Frowning, he looked from the papers to Patty, who was now wiping down the counters with a moist cloth. "Most of these deaths just seem like accidents or natural causes."
"Of course they do. Vampires love keeping their murders secret. Easier to kill again if no one suspects you the first time."
She shrugged as she cleaned, as if this were the most normal, casual conversation to be having. He wondered instantly what Patty's life was like when she wasn't tracking down vampires and killing them. It occurred to him that he had no idea, and had never asked. It wasn't something that any of the Slayers seemed open to discussing. But Joss was curious nonetheless.
"So why does the society think that vampires are responsible exactly? Isn't it just a tad bit strange that so many of these deaths feature severed arteries and that several victims were noted to have been severely anemic?"
She crossed the room to him then and flipped through the pages, stopping to point to several notes.
"These are the kinds of details you need to pay attention to, Joss. A good slayer knows that. Learn that early on and you could be one of the best slayers out there in just a few years."
A good slayer? Meaning that Joss wasn't one? It reminded him too much of what Abraham had said on the day of the barbecue. Maybe he wasn't as good at his job as he'd thought. "You have a point. Worth looking into anyway." He closed the folder and tucked it under his arm before going back to the door. Time was still moving, and he had work to do. Work that would take him away from the stress of spending the summer with his family, with his cousin. "I'll interview the four most recent victims' families, see if I can come up with anything."
"Joss?"
Her voice was soft and wavering, as if tears might not be far behind. It was enough to give Joss pause, with his hand on the doorknob. Patty hurried over to him, drawing her arms up around herself protectively. Her eyes darted around the room as if someone other than the two of them might be listening.
"I want to tell you something. Something that..."